What is an algorithm? What would you say an algorithm is?
What is an algorithm? It's like a set of operations, a routine procedure for calculating something.
Yeah, so that's the definition that they give here. They give it as a way to do things. And it's an interesting definition here where he defines it as an algorithm is like a set of steps that you can follow with pen and paper.
Welcome to ADSP, the podcast, episode 218, recorded on January 22nd, 2025. My name is Connor, and today, with my co-host, Bryce, we chat about a book that he recently purchased in London called Algorithms.
You've got fake snow behind you, but there's also, I imagine, real snow.
It is minus 14, feels like minus 21. Let's get that in Fahrenheit for you folks.
Now, even I know that's
that's minus 6 Fahrenheit.
Yeah, that
feels
is
like
that is rough.
An extreme cold warning in Toronto.
Yeah, it's pretty cold here. Well, funny thing. So I think So I spent a few years living in Louisiana when I worked at LSU, and I remember one time there was like a frost in at LSU. It was like February or something, and there was, you know, going to be frost and maybe like, you know, some ice, and they shut down the university for like 2 days because there was a concern that there could be black ice on some of the stairs and that the LSU students wouldn't know how to handle that, and so it was just best just to shut down the whole place. And I don't know if they actually got 11 inches, but Louisiana has been hit with like a ton of snow. They have like, I think like 8 inches in New Orleans. And New Orleans, folks, New Orleans has 8 inches of snow. Like, what is this weird world we live in right now? Oh, man. But I'm thinking about my old boss, Hartmut, who he really, you know, one of the main reasons he moved to Louisiana was the weather. Like, he doesn't want to be cold. He likes that it's nice and warm there. Maybe it gets a little too warm, but I'm just thinking like the last day, like, God, that poor guy. Like, I don't even know if he owns anything other than shorts anymore. And it's got to be brutal there.
Thoughts go out to those in Louisiana.
Yeah.
And anywhere warm that is not, I mean, it's pretty cold for Toronto, but it's not atypical that once or twice a year it drops down this low. So
you said it is negative 11 here Celsius, and it feels like well, it says it feels like that, but I think it says it feels like negative 14. I think it feels closer to negative 20.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't gone outside yet today, but
I'm hoping I won't have to.
Yeah. Yeah, in the last couple of days, trying to stay indoors is a good play. Just go to the gym. Don't run outside these days. So.
Yeah. I don't even have to go far to the gym. It's just I have the Bowflex Max trainer
right there. Oh, yeah, that's
right.
Looks like a Transformers robot or whatever you call those things.
It's really good when I'm not lazy. So how have you been?
I've been good. How about you? 2025?
2025.
New year.
New year. Yeah, I'm good. Been busy at work. I've actually, well, you're gonna be shocked. The listener's gonna be shocked. I have not one, but two programming books that are like here that I've been reading this morning. One of them is just called,
I want to say that's Programming Pearls, but I can't actually read it because it's white text on beige.
It's this one is just called Algorithms. This one I texted you about this, like, I got this in November when I was on the way back
I want to
from
say
Poland.
It was like a month or two ago.
Yeah, but then this is just Elements of Programming, and yeah,
Elements of Programming.
It has a very yellow cover, and then it has silver text on the yellow cover. I'm not sure that I agree with that, like, cover design. But yeah, I've been reading them. And some interesting things.
Share with us the interesting things that have been accumulated from these two books. Link in the show notes, folks.
Perfect.
We don't have affiliate links. If you click on them, EOP is for free, so.
Yeah. Not if you want this copy. This, ironically, speaking of Hartmut Kaiser, this book was given to me by my mentor, my guru, Hartmut Kaiser, for my, must have been 20th birthday. It was the first birthday that I was there in Louisiana. And he just came up to my desk and he gave it to me and he said, "Here, happy birthday." And that is how I acquired my hard copy of Elements of Programming. Wasn't wrapped or anything. It was just here. You need this.
So this is that copy? You made it sound like you picked up both of these books.
No, this is that copy. I think that it is very hard to get this copy of EOP. I do not think that this has been in print for some long period of time. Yeah, I think that this has not been in print for a while.
All right, so one book recently acquired, another book anciently acquired.
Yes, yes. I think this is also a first edition. Yes, it does appear to be a first edition. What of my many randomly valuable programming books? So I opened up the other book to the exact page that that I wanted. So this book, it's called Algorithms. I got it at, I went to this, we had like an 8-hour layover in London. And so my girlfriend, Ramona, not liking to just spend time in airports waiting, she was like, "Let's go into the city and do something." And so we went into this little...
Was this Heathrow or...
Yeah, this was Heathrow. We went into this little museum I think it was Hyde Park. Let me go find London here on Google Maps. It was Hyde Park, and there's this little museum called the Serpentine Gallery. And they had this exhibit on artificial intelligence, of course. They had this music that was composed by various neural nets. It was just like a small exhibit. It took like, 15, 20 minutes to go through it. But then they had a bookshop, and I had both Ramona and my mother with me. And so, of course, we had to spend as much time in the museum bookshop because they both love a good museum bookshop. And I saw this book, Algorithms, and I thought, hey, we have a podcast on algorithms. Maybe I should pick this up. And it had on the cover, I don't know if you can see, the algorithm for GCD. And so I thought, okay, maybe this is interesting. But I figured picking this up not at a tech conference or something, I figured that this book was going to be something that was meant for more of a mass audience. And that is in fact the case. I think it's meant to explain to, people who maybe don't have as much of a CS background or who aren't programmers what algorithms are. I think it's very structured towards our current age. The chapters are, chapter one is what is an algorithm, chapter two is graphs, then chapter three is searching, chapter four is sorting, chapter five is PageRank, and chapter six is deep learning. So very, very topical. And it's interesting because the first chapter talks about the idea that we're now in the algorithmic age, that we're past the computer age. Computers are not taken for granted, and it's all about the algorithm. And it talks about this idea that people are starting to treat the algorithms like they're a higher power. You talk about the algorithm decided this, like it's some magical thing. I feel like that does kind of reflect how some folks view technology these days. But it's interesting because it's both approachable, I think, to anyone, but also like dives pretty deep into some pretty advanced topics. And I certainly think you need some background in math to be able to read this book and not be lost. But in the chapter one on what is an algorithm, I came across two interesting things. The first, and this is a quiz for you, I guess, Connor, do you know the origin of the word algorithm?
Vaguely, yeah. I'm not going to know the exact origin, but it's from the Middle East. If I had to guess, we're going to go and say Persian.
You are correct. It comes from the name of Muhammad ibn Musa al-Khawarizmi.
Al-Hashima. Do you know the name of the guy that algorithm was named after?
It's a Persian guy. It's a Khwarizmi or something like that.
She said the same thing I said. Yeah, he's a Persian guy. Yes. So she didn't know the name either, which means let's go. And my fiance is like a history buff. She listened to, I want to say, all of that history podcast, correct?
Yeah, but that doesn't make you a history buff.
Yeah, it does.
I also took informal courses.
All right, we'll find you another history question later. Get ready.
He's right, just his name is hard to say.
His name is hard to say. She says she does actually know it.
Oh, it is. I just tried to pronounce it, and I'm sure I did it very poorly, so I'm not going to try it again. But anyways, this dude, Al-Khwarizmi, we're going to go with that. This dude was circa like 780 to 850, Persian scholar, worked in the fields of mathematics, astronomy, geography. The term algebra comes from the Arabic title of his most influential work, and the translation of this title is pretty great, which is the compendious book on calculation by completion and balancing. And I just think that's a great book name, and I hope it's as good in the original or Arabic as it is in the translation. His name was Latinized to Algorithmus. And then that, in combination with the Greek word for number, which is arithmos, sort of evolved into the term algorithm. But algorithm originally just meant like doing decimal arithmetic. And it's only in like the last 200 years or so that it's come to mean what the second thing that I found interesting about this chapter is. It's come to mean what an algorithm is. And the second interesting thing is, what is an algorithm? What would you say an algorithm is?
What is an algorithm? It's like a set of operations, a routine procedure for calculating something.
Yeah, so that's the definition that they give here. They give it as a way to do things. And it's an interesting definition here where he defines it as an algorithm is like a set of steps that you can follow with pen and paper. And they repeat that a couple times. And he sort of makes the claim, the author of this book somewhere here, that an algorithm is something that you can carry out ourselves. And I'm not certain what exactly he means by that or why that's significant, because I suppose he means something that like you can do in paper or you can do in like pseudocode. But he almost says it in a way that it's like, it's something that humans could do manually and just that computers can do it faster.
I think it's like a layman's olive branch, right? Because if you think of the first algorithms we learned, at least the ones that I consider, it's long division and long multiplication. When you're in, I don't know, we'll say grade three. But times may have changed for those that are born after the millennia, the turn of the millennia. They might teach it sooner because that's what happens in the education system. So I guess it depends on where in the world you are. But I distinctly remember learning, long-form multiplication and long-form division. And it's just like a set of operations. You multiply the first digit in the second number with everything in the first, and then you add a zero for the second line. It's just a set of instructions. And I remember, too, being in math club for the, like, 1 month that existed at D.P. Todd Secondary in Prince George. Shout out to Prince George. I remember at one point we learned the algorithm for hand calculating square roots. And I thought that was very cool because up until that point, up until that 30-minute lunch session or whatever, I thought that was, like, a incalculable thing by hand because they didn't teach it in school. Like you go to your calculator and you hit the square root button. But there is actually like a set of steps where you converge into the, you know, square root of some number. And I thought that was fantastic, that this thing that was impenetrable and only a button on a calculator, I could now do by hand and in your head if you so desired as a party trick at some point. So, I mean, I do think it's kind of, do I agree? It's something you can do by hand. Not really, but I think I looked up this series. It is the MIT Press Essential Knowledge series. And there's a bunch of other books with the topics like deep learning, data science, and machine learning, revised and updated edition, cryptography. So I think this is kind of the academic version of your airport books. You know, the Malcolm Gladwell, bite-size, catchy titles. Usually half of them are self-improvement, you know, Atomic Habits, stuff like that. This is like your science slash academic versions of those kinds of books that you're going to find, which it's unsurprising that they describe algorithms in this kind of fashion, right? They're not targeting people that work at NVIDIA. they're targeting people that might also, in the same, you know, fell swoop, pick up Atomic Habits. And there's got to be a little bridge from there to walk over from Atomic Habits to algorithms.
I agree. I think that is the essence of the of the target of this book. But so then a little later in the chapter, he says a couple things that I resonate with. He says the only way to truly understand an algorithm is to perform it by hand. We must be able to execute the algorithm in the same way the computer would execute a program that implements it. And I find this interesting because when I'm implementing an algorithm or coming up with an algorithm, I usually will first write it out by hand, and I will first work through some problem by hand, usually like, you know, in like a smaller problem than what I would actually, you know, solve on a computer. I was recently the summed area table algorithm that we talked about on previous episodes, or I recently wrote a softmax implementation. And in both cases, I did what I always do, which is I picked some like trivial small problem size, and I sort of worked out on paper and also in Excel. I find myself increasingly using Excel to do this. I used to just do it in paper and Notepad, but Excel makes it easier to work with for these sorts of like multidimensional problems, where, you know, I wrote out my test problems and then I sort of imagined here's the series of steps that I would need to take to get to the solution. Or in the case of something like softmax, I can look up online. Like, it's not like I'm creating some new thing. I have, you know, the code. I see this is the code of like what this does, but I want to understand like how does it actually work, and to understand that so I can explain it to other people, right? Because if I want to use it in a talk, then I need to be able to explain why are we doing each step of this thing. And so by going through and me manually doing each step and being able to look at each step, I can sort of develop the intuition for how does this thing work. I imagine that this is how most people go about understanding something, is that you either work through it yourself manually, or maybe you write some code and print it out at each stage, but you look at like how does this work for some small problem. And that's sort of, to me, is like what he's talking about of being able to execute it by hand. Is that what you do when you start playing around with some new problem?
It depends on the complexity of the problem. And I'm also have the difficulty of, I'm just going to wait for my lovely fiance, finishes in the microwave and slamming doors. She needs to eat breakfast though, folks. Maybe I'll just leave all that in there. I love you, sweetie. I love you. Get that croissant.
I hope we're not microwaving a croissant, though. That seems like that's some sort of French food crime.
I mean, it's not a fancy croissant, and it is indeed being microwaved.
That seems like it's some sort of French food crime.
I don't know. Our listeners in France
or Quebec,
let us know.
Quebec, France,
the Quebecois.
Yeah.
Let us know if we violated some kind of Yeah. Well, you can hear it. You can hear it beeping. We might as well just wait because she's about to open the
fun fact. Fun fact. My dad was visiting us last week and we were talking about family history on my dad's side. My dad was adopted, but he mentioned something that I think I'd known but hadn't remembered, which is that his biological father is French Canadian, making me 1/4 French Canadian, which I would say explains a lot about my personality, my general love for Montreal, just many, my haughtiness.
Not your love for Montreal bagels, though. You are first and foremost a New York bagel.
No, I'm kind of a convert.
Really?
Yeah, wow. I don't know if I posted to social media, but we did this Montreal bagel making class when we were up there before we went to Morocco. And it was a lot of fun. And they were very, very good bagels. I ate like 4 of them.
All right. Well, you heard it here first, folks. Definitely not going to upset anyone on the internet. Former lover of New York bagels, Bryce Adelstein Lelbeck, has now converted and does think that Montreal bagels are superior.
I mean, Montreal in general, just for food, is, you know, the best. Like, that's why you go to Montreal, for the food.
It is true. They do have Felix and Norton cookies. I'll leave it at that, folks. Pink truck by the waterfront. Next time you're there.
We went to this restaurant, Candide, and they had this preparation of spinach that was the best spinach I've ever had. I don't know what they did to these spinach leaves, but I could have literally eaten nothing but that spinach for the rest of my life.
Wow. And you could be like Popeye.
Okay. All right. So back to algorithms.
Anyways, back to algorithms. The question was, do I jot things out by pen and paper? And I was saying that I suffer from the problem of having been so far removed from the first time that I had to understand or visualize a problem. My first thought was that I definitely did not need to go and implement stood reverse to be convinced that swapping the last and first elements one at a time and incrementing and decrementing two pointers until they converge, yeah, works. Like, that seems simple enough that I automatically would be like, yeah, that's how it works. But is that actually how I felt? Because I would also say the same thing about one of my favorite algorithms, flood fill. But I remember the very first time I didn't learn a flood fill. I just organically implemented it in a qualifier for an ICPC collegiate programming contest when I was at SFU. There was free pizza and it had this sort of graph or matrix problem where you had to go from point A to point B. And I didn't know how to do it, but I just thought, oh, I guess if you recursively start at your starting point and then add the number one, and then if you have some queue where you just basically, you know, recursively search the four adjacent elements from each square and you keep a cache to ones you've already visited, that should work. I wasn't convinced that it would work because it's a recursive solution and kind of hard to wrap your head around the first time you implement or think about it. But then I implemented it, it worked, and I was like, ah, my idea worked. So there's an example of something I wasn't sure worked. But once again, I did not do this by hand and paper. I just implemented the algorithm. Then you look at the, you know, you just output the matrix of numbers at the end of the day that is a zero for where you started and incrementing numbers for the flood fill path. My point being is that sometimes paper and pen helps, but a lot of the times I just implement it on the computer. But I feel like that's, I don't know, like a 21st century equivalent of pen and paper. But yeah, I don't know.
I do even today, like, start off on pen and paper more than you might think. And I think I've done this since the beginning of my career. Sometimes it'll be like on Notepad or on Excel, like I said, but I think I very often will start off, before I even write any code, I'll start off just thinking through it. And I think part of that is that I've found that if I start coding before I think through it, I'm more likely to lead myself down the wrong path and then get like tunnel vision. Give me a little more background on this flood fill. What is the flood fill problem?
I mean, it's got its own Wikipedia page. I'm sure if we will link it in the show notes, but as soon as you see the animation.
Yeah, I'm looking right now.
It's basically just a recursive exploration of a 2D array or matrix where you have a starting position. This actually animation is not great. And I believe they call it flood fill because it's the algorithm when you're in Windows Paint or some equivalent paint program and you hit that fill button and you need to fill a square. It does this algorithm when basically saturating a space. And I guess in that example, you're just changing one pixel color to another pixel color. And it goes and basically you start at an origin point and then you have either 4 or 8 directions, depending on how you're allowed to traverse. If you're allowed to traverse diagonally, it's 8. If you're only allowed to traverse orthogonally, it's up, down, left, right. And you start at, it's usually you have a secondary matrix, which is the size of your original, and you set everything to either 0 or -1 or something like that. Then you assign your origin point, the value 0, and then you put in a queue all the 4 orthogonal places that you can visit. And then you, once you're done putting those in the queue, you're in some kind of while loop, you pop off the queue, the first element, and then you assign that 1 plus the previous value. So along with the coordinates of the position that you've stored in the queue, you also need to assign the previous value that you were coming from. And so then if you're starting at 0, the next 4 spots will all get the value 1, and you just do that recursively. And you have to make sure, either with a cache or by just checking, when I'm now at the second point and I'm checking the 4 orthogonal elements that I'm going to visit, you have to make sure that they haven't already been visited. And in certain algorithms, you actually do need to check. And if you found a shorter path, you might need to assign a minimum value. In the classic case, you don't need to do that because you know that the way that the algorithm works, you're always going to end up visiting elements in the shortest way possible. And then you just do that to completion.
So the cache is to avoid having to do it redundantly.
Yeah, but the way that I would do it, like I said, if you set everything to -1, you can always just check, make sure that I'm only exploring elements that currently their value is -1. And then as soon as it gets assigned a value that's positive, or 0 in the case of your origin, you know that you'll never visit it again. Be sure to check these show notes either in your podcast app or at adspthepodcast.com for links to anything we mentioned in today's episode, as well as a link to a GitHub discussion where you can leave thoughts, comments, and questions. Thanks for listening. We hope you enjoyed and have a great day.
Low quality, high quantity. That is the tagline of our podcast.
It's not the tagline. Our tagline is chaos with sprinkles of information.